Nobody really want fuego. Messiah will bring fire down worse than Waco. Buy you some coffee and Lego, your Eggos, your sandwich with mayo and two slices of mayo. Sitting at home on the couch playing Halo, but the Messiah ain't playing no Eggos. Games, women in pants gonna get it. Flames, brothers keeping no commandments. Same, calling our armies a favor. Even with your NATO and soldiers with Dracos. Just tell me, how can you stop a tornado or better yet the lava from the volcano? They really can't, bro. They have to pay, bro. The most I say so. So in chase they go for all their wicked atrocities they owe. For all their wicked atrocities they owe. From San Diego to Trinidad Tobago, I'm spitting these words so all Israelites they know. Keeping commandments the only way we grow, so we can defeat the nation Galileo. Nation Galileo, get it? Cause they pale. He's bringing them hell for every bill of sale. So family, just examine yourself. When that fuego come, you don't wanna get left. Forsake your sin so you complete the test. Then you can have complete rest from all your stress. Fight to do right to your very last breath, or stay wicked and receive second death. Destruction of enemies is muy bueno. Make sure that's one of the things that you pray for. Into the kingdom, the sinners, they can't go. The sinners can't go. So we say, hasta luego, hasta luego.
Brothers really don't want fuego. Sisters really don't want fuego. Nobody really want fuego. From the one that's super dead. Brothers really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Fuego really don't want fuego.
Turn it.
Nobody really want fuego.
Hey,
brother, want that super negro.
Fuego.
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 Brother, you don't want that fuego.
Hey.
Fuego.
Fuego.
Welcome to the Power Hour, the Lost 144K. I'm Captain Yashua.
Shalom. Happy Sabbath, Captain Aparia.
Officer Shai, shalom.
Shalom, Soldier Hezekiah.
Yes, yes. So, a little bit of a later start today. We're going to have a more condensed show, but this will probably be a multi-topic discussion. It may stream off into other things. We'll see how it goes. So, today will be the Power of 45. today will be the Power 45, so we can roll through it that way. You know, I was musing around trying to see what I would go over today, and there's so much going on, right? And I said, what would be the most beneficial? What would give the most value? Obviously, there's wars, rumors of wars, but it almost seems like that's always something there, right? So,
yeah.
And I said, does that really, I know that's interesting, and we'd probably get a lot of people tuning in if we were going to start talking about that, but I said, my main of it is I'm not going to start giving some heavy revelations. Yeah, I might talk about, like, hey, it's prophecy, but then I'm going to go back to what, okay, now what?
Sounds 111 to 10.
Right, yeah, so my thing with that is always now what. You guys saw, like, on the group yesterday, the officers group, I was like, hey, you know, because one of the officers was like, yeah, man, you know, this is heavy, it's revelations. And I get it. I get that sentiment. I was the same way first coming in. And, you know, I mean, even some of the captains were like, oh, it's about to go down. And then usually my question is, okay, it very well may be about to go down.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Right.
Now what you going to do? What changes for you and this walk and your mission based on that going on?
Right, because everybody likes that stuff, right? Like you said, it's exciting, it's entertaining. When Christ, the Messiah, comes down, right? Let's say he comes right now. Are you ready? Let's ask that question. Are you really ready? Is any of us ready?
Personally, hell no.
Right?
And that's probably the first question that should pop in your head.
Are you ready?
If you're advocating that this is a sign being fulfilled.
Right. Stop for that moment.
And I never see that. I just see people saying, all praises going down.
Right.
I get scared.
I get scared to
the extent of, have I done enough?
Right.
Have I made my calling and election sure?
Right, because we know the scripture says right there, we're going to feel like he abandoned us, but he's still, if we're the elect, he's going to take us up.
Right, yeah. So my fear stems from that, because it's like, this is a sobriety check.
Sobriety check.
The scripture tells us, be sober-minded when you see those things. Don't sleep as others do.
Yep.
So I'm like, damn, let me not get drunk in the fact that I'm witnessing a prophecy come to light. Let me refocus, and what does the scripture require of me, knowing that the time is nearer than it was before?
Blow into the breathalyzer.
Right.
And see.
Yeah, let me see
am
where
I
I'm at.
Am
I sober enough? Right. So with that being said, I've done plenty of shows like that. So I'm not going to do that today.
Good choice, Cap.
I'm not going to do that. There's an article here I've been wanting to go over for a while. And, you know, I think it's kind of appropriate because it'll cover all tribes. But remember, all tribes have to be awakened, 12,000 from each, before that day will come. And we certainly do want that. I said, hey, we got to continue to work on Gad and Reuben. our Native American brothers and sisters in banding together and returning to their true heritage. So there's an article that we'll touch on. It's a condensed show today, so you know we'll probably more than likely have a part two on this. I'm sure it'll stimulate a lot of dialogue between us. We're going to talk about the American Indian boarding schools. It's an old article here from NPR. It's under the heading of race. They have a topic on their website called race. It's the first of a two-part report. And it says, and I think the way they've structured this is they try to do it from how they're like now versus how they are then. Because believe it or not, there are still some American Indian schools that exist.
Mm-hmm. Aware of that
today.
Wasn't aware of
there that. Still are. So we'll talk about that on a continuing show. That's not the topic for today. But American Indian boarding schools, it says they haunt many, right? Because a lot of times we look at these things and especially those who scoff at our calamities, who laugh at the way we were smitten before our enemies as the Most High prophesied. And usually you get is that was so long ago, get over it. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps type of mentality, not realizing the long-term residual effects where the scripture says that we would be destroyed by these actions. And we are. We're destroyed spiritually, mentally, some of us physically, the ailments of the curses that we suffer, so on and so forth. And before you can convince somebody that they need medicine, you got to show them that they're sick. So I said, listen, we got to continue to bang on this stuff because if, in fact, some craziness pops off of the world events that just happened and developed so quickly over the past few days, I can't control any of that because that is prophecy being fulfilled. And that means that's what God desires and wills. Mm-hmm. So I don't have no say over any of that. There's nothing I can do to persuade that. Mm-hmm. Check, I'm aware. Now, what's my checklist for me and what I need to do for my people?
Right. That's the end of the movie at the beginning, right?
Right.
And then, what, like you said, what are we going to do for our people? And right. What are we going to do for ourselves if we want to get that salvation?
Right. Now, it is important to know that
sure.
because you need to show people where they at.
Right. We're not downplaying
it. So that they know how much time they got left,
yeah.
right? Because people are too lackadaisical.
Yeah.
Stuff like that puts a sense of urgency. It's a faith builder for some to not look at the Bible as a fairy tale. All those things are great. I'll leave that to Bishop and so on and so forth.
But you know what? Okay.
Right.
Okay, here's the thing, too. We know that's the inevitable, right? We know that that's the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that there's steps. Like, we can't beat a dead horse with a stick. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we know that we have steps we need to take.
Right. So I want to talk about this because this goes back to that whole show the sickness and the medicine. Show the sickness and the medicine. The Bible's always going to be the medicine. That's the treatment. The Bible's the medicine. The treatment is the laws, statutes, and commandments.
Right.
And the steps that it takes to do that. So we'll see. We'll see how it flows and where we go from
there. And on that vein, and the prognosis is, Lord willing, you will get the kingdom if you do all those things.
Right.
Does that mean yourself and know where you're coming?
Keep it medical.
Right.
Well,
that is the prognosis. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of make sure I finish sharing the video. I don't know if I've shared the whole thing. I'm trying to do my sharing like I normally do. So I'm going to go ahead and share it. And if you want to just... before I get into the article, as I touch on this,
yep, just give me a cue when you ready, and I'll just shut up.
Yeah, just a couple minutes.
All right. But anyway, so again, at the end of the day, like I mentioned, we know what the prophecy is. We know the book of Revelations is going to happen, right? We don't know exactly when, but we're starting to see the signs. We're starting to see things pick up more and more, quicker and quicker. Okay. You know, so those who are really spiritual and understand this thing, you know, you guys are probably, brothers and sisters, probably feeling certain things. You know what? Leave that to yourselves from the perspective of don't get all hokey pokey about it, right? And start, you know, selling your things or quitting your job or going ahead and waiting on rooftops for the chariots and all that stuff with basketball and suitcases.
Yeah.
Listen, the scripture says that when it happens, people are going to be getting married. People are going to be working. You're going to be doing your normal life. So you're never going to be prepared. The Most High set it up where you're not going to be sitting, chilling on your couch, counting down the time for Christ. It ain't happening like that. So stop.
Yeah, because he knows Israel. If he would have told us exactly when.
Right.
You'll have some quitting.
We would wait to the last possible minute to start repenting.
Let's get ready. Let's throw some prayers.
Nah, it's not going to work that way, right? I don't want to hear, the first will be the last and the last will be first and all that stuff. Nah. You're still going to be judged on your work, which is why Christ brought out the talents, okay? And what we did, what each of the different types of Israelites did, what they were blessed with, okay? So you still got to put in work, okay? Guess what, man? That quitting time is not going to happen, okay? Until 144,000 of the men are sealed with this word, and we can see, and again, the operative word is what? Sealed.
Right.
We got sealed, meaning that we got this, you know, pretty doggone, you know, embedded in our lives. Okay. And then there's a process after that. So here's the other thing too, right? Cause we're all excited about that, right?
Yes.
Guess what? We ain't going into the kingdom right away, according to scriptures.
Right.
So guess what? Those same people that are feeling, but talk about the war. Do about this. Guess what? Now you're in the wilderness. Guess what? You're going to be real disappointed.
Right.
Because the scripture says that it's going to be 40 years.
Right.
Okay? 40 years in the wilderness.
Right.
Again.
Right.
All right? So it ain't gonna, you ain't going to be chilling on a golden chariots yet, thrones or anything like that yet.
Right. Right.
Because now you're going to have to get proven in the wilderness. Right.
Once
it's another
more.
Process.
Right. Once more. Right. So it's funny, too. I don't want to digress too far because we're short. I want to jump on the topic. I was thinking about that in the wilderness last night because I started watching I was watching Lost in Space on Netflix.
The series?
Yeah, because, it's good. It's good. They came out with season two, and it's much better than season one. Season one, I dropped.
It's based on the show, right? The original show?
The only thing that's based on the show
the robot?
Is there's a robot and there's the Robinsons.
That's
and,
it.
Other than that, it's totally different, which is great. It's actually really good.
Okay.
Like you're looking at it spiritually, it shows about family sticking together, unity, how to esteem others better than yourself. It's good. There's a lot of good things you can get from it, and it's entertaining. So I finished that, and I started watching this this blasphemous show, Messiah.
Oh.
But I gotta watch it. You know why I gotta watch it? It's intel on ESO, bro.
Oh.
It helps me see what they know, how much they know, right? And it's good. It just gives me a talking point. Anyway, I got through an episode, like a quarter of one. I got tired. But when you spoke about the wilderness, man, these people were rebellious as he's talking to him. He's like, bro, you don't know. He's forget what you know about God. He was like, I'm here. I'm telling you now what you – like, because, like, he starts off with the Arabs, right? So he's with Ishmael. And he takes them into the desert, and one of the imams is like questioning him and stuff like that, and like he's basically going in on them, and he's telling them like, "Yo, you guys don't hold on to these old things. Like the Father sent me to show you this stuff now," and it just made me laugh because I said, "Damn, that's how it's gonna be." I said, "That's how it's gonna be in the wilderness. People are gonna question Christ, and except that in here, he's not because they have Christianity on their head. He's not killing anybody. You know, he was pretty rough. I'm sure some Christians were offended because he was like, bro." Get up and put someone else in your seat. Like, he told the guy to go. The guy was tight with him. Like he got, like, stern.
Damn.
And some people were probably like, not my Jesus, right?
Right.
But I was like, woo. I said, if he would have kicked him in the chest, that probably would have been, like, more legit. But anyway, I say that to say, feet. I made that to say, it made me think about what you were just saying about the wilderness and being proved again.
Once more.
Because you could see it already. Like, and it's just like the same spirit, like with Moses in the wilderness, like in Exodus 14. I'm sorry, Numbers 14. And they're like, they're all there, and they're like, oh, did he bring us here to die? We have no water. We have no food. Like, where's he taking us? I said, oh, man.
Bickering.
So I found it interesting because I said, damn, that's exactly how it's going to be. Not with the Arabs, of course, going to be our people. But I said, goodness gracious. So, and there's cool little parts to it. The reason I decided to start watching it is I saw Deacon Adan was watching it. And if he watches something, I got to peep it because that means he's probably getting all cerebral about it. But he was showing a scene like with the CIA. And there's a little clip with the CIA where a dude is being interviewed for the CIA. And she asked him about truth. And he was like, well, I think truth is a gray or whatever. She was like, oh, no. She goes, I'm not giving you the position. And she was like, you know, I shouldn't be telling you this, but you're not going to get the position. And he was like, well, why not? She was like, you know, the CIA is a holy order. She said, and she goes, you know, what we do and whatever. She goes, truth is not gray. You have to buy into the truth of the CIA because they feel like lives are at risk or whatever and this, that, and the other.
Damn.
So I was just like, damn. Yep. So,
right. Yeah.
Made you want to take a sip.
It was heavy. That shit got me parched. I said, I got to stay awake for this. You can't watch this like with one eye open, you know? I said, I put the recliner down. I said, my feet need to be on the ground because once the feet go up,
that's it.
That's it. Anyway, I'm sorry. I digress too much. So this is going to be an intro to probably what will be a series for the next few weeks of the show. So American Indian boarding schools haunt many, right? So this is the article that I'm going to look at briefly. It says, for the government, it was a possible solution to the so-called Indian problem. For the tens of thousands of Indians who went to boarding schools, it's largely remembered as a time of abuse and desecration of culture. The government still operates a handful of off-reservation boarding schools, but funding is in decline. Now, many American Indians are fighting to keep the schools open. So I got to dig a little more to find out why that's going on.
Right.
But I think it's because of the way they've evolved and what they've become for them. This is an old article. This is from 2008, so I'm not even sure how relevant the existing schools are. But the history of it is very relevant and what its effect was, right? So it says, kill the Indian, save the man. The late performer and Indian activist Floyd Redcrow Westerman was haunted by his memories of boarding school. And Westerman was the Edomite name that he happened to take. Mm-hmm. It could have been given to him through his slave masters because Native Americans were slaves.
Right.
But Native Indians didn't have last names, right? His name would have been Redcrow.
Mm.
Right.
That's how they rolled, right?
And that's it, yep.
And prior to that, he would have had a Hebrew name, and it would have been son of whoever. That's usually how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, as a child, he left his reservation in South Dakota for the Wahpeton Indian Boarding School in North Dakota. 60 years later, he still remembers watching his mother through the window as he left. At first, he thought he was on the bus because his mother didn't want him anymore. But then he noticed she was crying. And that's the prophecy where it talks about your sons and daughters will be taken and there shall be no might in thy hand.
Right.
It's not always in the manifestation of the conquistadors came and snatched them that way.
Hmm.
Sometimes they took them and it was this mandate to go to these schools, which were... when we get into it, it's an agent of socialization.
Right.
And every organized government in the world uses school as one of them. There are many. Uses school as one of them to socialize people.
Re-education school.
Just like today.
Reform schools, re-education.
Right. Right. Well, you know, you overlooked that, right? Mm-hmm. Reform means I'm going to form you to the way of my beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. We overlooked that whole thing.
It's just like today when they have the, you know, if you don't go to school, you know, your parents are getting in trouble. You know,
talk a little closer to the mic, brother, so we can hear.
If you don't send your kids to school, you know, the senior officers, you know,
it's exactly the same today.
Same,
and they'll take them from you if you don't.
Right.
So I gotta go on record and say this: it's against the law to pull your kid out of school and not have a qualified homeschool accredited type of thing for them in place.
Right.
Because I'm very pro homeschool. Right. It's challenging, I understand, with the environment that we work in today. My goal is to hopefully after third grade, if it be the Lord's will, pull my daughter out of school and homeschool her. You know, IUIC has members that have been working on something that it's not an IUIC as far as being under the church. But we have a homeschool thing that's almost very near to fruition that we're going to start piloting, and this is one aspect of what we're doing. But in light of that, depending on what your local laws are and stuff like that, you can't homeschool your kids without having to have, you know, the something else to, like, take them to. And especially, I think there's a good one here now that they have online. I think it's called K-12 or something like that.
Yep.
And you can do that. So the point is, you know, you can't just pull them and not do anything. You still got to give them something. But you can't affect those agents of – you can't – affect those agents of socialization. You want to talk about captivity and one of all things, you still have to go through the way their curriculum is guided and structured,
right?
Even with the homeschool that we're doing, you get a little more liberty with that way, but there's certain basic things that they want you to teach them. And I don't know if we'll get to it today or how and when it'll come up, but like, for example, in the American school system, they teach you about the American heroes, the heroes of the American Revolution, the Civil War, the founding fathers. And, you know, that's kind of what we went over when we did the Thanksgiving show, when we talk about how they deify them. Right. And they say that, you know, they almost put these people in a spiritual sense, like Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, you know, how great these men were. And, you know, it creates this aura and mystique around them. And their convictions, manifest destiny, all these different things that come up in that regard.
Right. You know what's funny, Cap, on that? Well, what's interesting, not funny, what's interesting, is that I found this out about a month ago. Puerto Ricans fought, who are the tribe of Ephraim, in the Civil War. But you never hear that. And not that that was our war, but they only speak about, okay, let's face it, Caucasians.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, but you had Southern Kingdom, the so-called African-Americans, and you had Northern Kingdom that fought in every single war.
Yeah. Oh, no, no, no. You have the Borinquerers. I went over them, I think, a few years ago.
Yes.
And they were a an army unit that was they were pretty known for their valiancy in combat, and they fought in every world war, in the Vietnam War, and every major war.
Yeah.
You know, they were a smaller unit, so stories like that don't get told except from the perspective of those that preserve that history to tell them. And, you know, so they'll have you think, like, I think I went over when all this stuff was going on where Trump was after the hurricane and he was talking crap about Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, well, we have the Borinquenaires. They were they were a known battalion. Right.
And I only bring that up again because of the fact that they will always undermine us.
Right.
We will always be undermined as a people.
Right.
Hey, and our people today have a hard time following or going to school. Because all you learn about, I'm recalling every time I was in middle school, high school, is white people, white people, white people. And it's like, bro, where am I at? That's what I would think. Where am I at?
Where's your representation?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because right away, you know,
where's my hero?
People get triggered. You hear us saying white people, and they're going to be like, oh, you're racist. Right. Hey, where's the representation, right?
Black, Hispanic.
That's my point. You know what? You hit it right there. That's my whole point of bringing that whole thing up. Where's the representation as a people?
And taking it back to the Bible, that's why we have a lot of Native American Indian brothers and sisters that hate the Bible because they think, just like Ruby said, remember?
Right.
She said, the Bible, I don't know. It's a white man's book.
Right. Because that's the connotation that it got. And the Indian schools is one of those things because part of the curriculum was they beat him over the head with the Bible.
Right.
So it says, Westerman spent the rest of his childhood in boarding schools far from his family and his Dakota tribe. He went on to become an actor, an activist with the American Indian Movement, and a songwriter. And, you know, this, as I'm sure you post the link, like when we're done, you can post the links and stuff like that. You'll see the pictures, man. They got one here. I don't know if you can zoom in on it in the article, Shai. It says Tom Torlino. You got this real dark Gadite brother. And then how he looked after he went to the boarding school.
Okay, yeah.
So it's the dark, dark skin brother. It's the
It's
the one that's this color.
That's amazing.
Black.
For those that say Gad is not our people, bro, look at how dark this dude is, bro.
Right.
He got all light skin.
Well, he did because they kept him out of the sun.
Right.
You
right.
know what I'm saying? They probably put him. So look, he went from his native roots and how they had him, right? And then so they made him cut his hair. This was part of the MO. They made him dress like them in the European fashion.
Right.
Took off his fringes.
Right.
You know that suit didn't have fringes.
Those farmers don't have fringes, right? You know? Look at that. Wow. Amazing. Anyway, so let me go on to the article. So he says he sang about his experiences growing up. You put me in your boarding school, made me learn your white man rule, be a fool. This was one of the lines from his songs.
Wow.
The federal government began sending American Indians to off-reservation boarding schools in the 1870s. When the United States was still at war with the Indians. So this is not that long ago. This is stuff that we forget about in the light of things. So after the Emancipation Proclamation, we still had Israelites that were at war, actual war with the natives, still trying to hang on to the land that was stolen from them. An army officer, Richard Pratt, founded the first of these schools. He based it on an education program he had developed in an Indian prison. So let you know what the foundation of this program was. It was based off of an education program he had done while in Indian prison. He described his philosophy in a speech he gave in 1892. A great general has said that the only good Indian is a dead one, Pratt said. In a sense, I agree with the sentiment, but only in this, that all the Indian there is in the race should be dead. Kill the Indian in him and save the man. And you can apply that. I'm telling you, if you just change that word to Israelite,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see it and you see it today, right? And with what we're doing and what's happening, this is exactly what creates that Daniel 9:7, the confusion of faces, right? Let's read that real quick. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's Daniel. That's Deuteronomy 28:48.
Right.
Until they had destroyed thee,
yes.
They took the Israelite out of us.
Yes. Yes, until we have destroyed us, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, read that one first, 28:48, mm-hmm. and then we'll read Daniel 9 and 7.
I'll grab Daniel.
I got Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 48. Therefore, shalt thou serve thine enemies, which the Lord shall send against thee.
And where did we not? For them to be, have the power and authority to take us from our parents, to take our native brothers and sisters from the parents, and send them to these boarding schools, that's in servitude, right? They said that we have prisons. Let's just even go past the whole slave trade. Oh, slavery was abolished. They were still mandating and taking these. This is after the Emancipation Proclamation. The boarding school started in 1870, and they were sending them there, right? So they were serving their enemies. Come on.
In hunger.
In hunger.
And in thirst.
Uh-huh.
And in nakedness.
And we know, especially when it comes to Gad, right? What were some of the things they did? They wound up killing off many of the buffalo, which was their lifeblood. That was what they used, not just for food, but they used it for clothing, for shelter. They used all of the animal. Nothing went to waste, right? And they had the government meat programs that they would give them rotted meat and things that were infected. They had to get grains and things that had worms and what do they call them? Weevils that get in those grains and things like that. You know, in thirst, in every aspect, they had to start getting permission for something that they were freely able to do once before, right? And if you bring that up to today, it's kind of the same way, right? Come on.
And in want of all things.
In want of all things. In want of all things. They would not allow them to be Indians anymore. So they said, hey, if you basically, right? Remember the sentiment we just read. The only good Indian is a dead Indian. So they said, all right, you have one guy that, and you know, that's the spirit of the Most High that put it on him. He softened their heart a little bit because it's letting you know that if they would have went with that sentiment, they would have killed them all off. The Most High softened this one man's heart and said, listen, we don't have to actually kill the human being. And this is so that a remnant could survive.
Right.
We don't have to kill the human being. We just need to kill the Indian in him, right? Right. Which, by extension, is the Israelite in him, right? Because it got perverted while they were here,
right?
But it's the same type of thing that's perpetuated today with this mindset, right? Come on.
And he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he have destroyed thee.
And it said, and he shall, he, meaning it was a particular man, right? All nations had us in some form of captivity, but this is being very specific, right? Because he didn't say, and they,
right.
He said, and he. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he have destroyed thee. Meaning, once we were destroyed, there was no more need for that. And one of the main methods of this crafty counsel, how we were destroyed, is what you read in Daniel 9 and 7. Is that it on that verse?
Yes, sir.
Okay, get Daniel 9 and 7.
The book of Daniel 9, verse 7.
And this is a result of the Indian schools, of the reform schools, of the boarding schools. Come on.
Oh, Lord. Righteousness belongeth unto thee.
God knows everything that's just. He's determined what's good and bad. Come on.
But unto us, confusion of faces.
But unto us, confusion of faces. Meaning, if the Bible says you're an Israelite, then that's the right thing. That's the correct thing. If you're trying to come up with any other type of thing, any other type of understanding, any other type of doctrine, then that's not righteousness. What is that? What that is confusion, right? So read it from the top again.
O Lord, righteousness belongeth unto thee.
Righteousness belongeth unto thee, God. Come on.
But unto us, confusion of faces.
Read on.
As it is this day.
Even till this day, we have confusion of faces, right? Come on.
To the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
To the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, right? Judah being southern kingdom, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, northern kingdom. Come on.
And unto all Israel.
Unto all Israel, we have confusion of faces. That includes our Native American brothers and sisters. Come on.
That are near and that are far off.
That are near and that are far off. So what you get as a result of these boarding schools is that mindset of the Indian race should be dead. Kill the Indian in him and save the man.
Right.
Kill the Israelite in him and save the man, right? So it says transforming people inside out. 50 years later, Pratt's philosophy was still common. In 1945, Bill Wright, a Padawan Indian, was sent to the Stewart Indian School in Nevada. He was just 6 years old. This is in 1945, mind you, right?
Yeah.
Wright remembers matrons bathing him in kerosene and shaving his head. Students at federal boarding schools were forbidden to express their culture. Everything from wearing long hair to speaking even a single Indian word. Wright said he lost not only his language, but also his American Indian name. Get me that in the Maccabees where it says it was unlawful to express yourself to be a Jew. Is that 2 Maccabees 6?
Yep.
Because it's the same thing. This is how you know they're an extension of Greek, of Rome. It's the same thing. They just did it in different ways, right? Because we read here, he says, students at the federal boarding schools were forbidden to express their culture. So read this real quick. I think start at 6, okay. Right?
Yep. Second Maccabees, chapter 6. You want to start at 6?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Neither was it lawful for a man to keep Sabbath days or ancient feasts or to profess himself at all to be a Jew.
So you couldn't keep any of your customs. It's the same practice. They did it to us when we knew who we were, and even when we forgot who we were. So even though we weren't keeping the law as Native American, because when you were a Native American, you gave that up. You had remnants of it in there, right? They weren't keeping Sabbath days. They weren't doing it. They had a Mother Earth, Father Sky, all this other stuff. So they were already into the midst of idolatry, but it wasn't the way they wanted us to be. They said, no, you can't have your God. They will not let you have representation of self.
Right.
They don't want you to have self-actualization of self. They don't want you to be able to have a self that's not dictated by them.
Right.
This is why it's so paramount. This is why you get so much pushback on the depiction of Christ.
Yes.
That when we have that drawn out, all right, because it's not their depiction. They don't have control, and they understand the power of representation because they didn't even want to have Father Sky, Mother Earth.
Right. Just like I said, it's okay if it's Jesus as long as it's look like us.
Right. It's okay. Jesus is okay. As long as it's their version of Jesus. Right.
That's such a good point. You know what, Kat, real quick? Because they're okay with you reading the Bible.
Right.
Okay. And I went through this years ago. Okay. Oh, reading the good book. That's what they like to say.
Right.
But out of that same book, in that same book, that's the good book, it clearly says that the Israelites are people of color, are black,
right.
That Christ is black.
Right.
Once you bring that out, it's not a good book anymore.
Right.
Well, that goes into suppressionism too, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's that replacement theology where swaths of Christianity, and I say almost all of it, is based on the fact that you can be a spiritual Israelite. So suppressionism is the New Testament overtakes the old in the sense that with their understanding, all the promises and the covenants and all that stuff are no more. And then you'll have sects of Christianity that have the middle of the road where, yeah, the Jews' promises are still there.
Right.
But we also get to take
in
that
too. We're Christians.
Right. But by and large, what you get is a suppressionist theology, which is the Jews were replaced by heathen because the Jews denied Christ. That's called suppressionism. That's the academic term for that theology, right? So it's important that you see the parallels of what happened to us historically and how those curses were perpetual. The Most High said these things will pursue you for all your generations until you get yourself right. Was that it on that verse?
That is on that verse. Can I read 9 real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, let me read 6 and 9 so they don't lose the thought. 2 Maccabees chapter 6, verse 6. Neither was it lawful for a man to keep Sabbath days or ancient feasts or to profess himself at all to be a Jew. Verse 9, to get straight to the point. And whosoever would not conform themselves to the manners of the Gentiles should be put to death, then might a man have seen the present misery.
Right. So it says upon pain of death is how it was in those times. Here it was just based on the school. So let me read this excerpt again. So this was in 1945, right? This is Bill Wright. He's a Patwin Indian. This just to show you how jacked up they were in 1945. His name was Bill Wright.
Right.
Damn, everything was wrong about him too.
Right.
Bro, his name, that's not his name. He's a native.
Right.
They that goes into Deuteronomy 28:37 because there's levels to that. Let's read that real quick as well because it's not just the derogatory terms where they call us, you know, I can't even say them because we'll get probably censored off the air.
Yeah,
but you know the derogatory terms they have for us, right? So read this real quick. But also to take him and for him to have an American name, Bill Wright was not what his parents wanted to call him.
Right.
No. Right. No. By no.
So it goes to show you how quickly the effects of that were so effective, because you had one guy who was known as Red Cloud.
Right.
Right. And then they just threw the last name Westerman on
Red
there.
Crow.
Right.
Red Crow. And then they threw Westerman onto there.
Right.
And then now you get to a point where it's like he don't even have any designation that makes him of his tribe anymore. You're just Bill Wright.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
You know how many Bill Wrights I've known in my life?
Right.
And none of them look like Gad.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Right. So you know where that comes from. So read this real quick. That's part of this.
The book of Deuteronomy 28, verse 37. And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations of the Lord. Believe me.
Right. So a proverb and a byword among all nations. Being called anything outside of what you really are, is that
right?
Okay? And it's anti-Semitic, by the way.
Because right.
We descend from Semitic
yes.
peoples.
Right, right,
yes.
Exactly, right, right.
So calling us anything outside
Hit
of that is anti-Semitic, right? Exactly. Right?
Right.
So he says that he was sent to the Stewart Indian School in Nevada. He was just six. Wright remembers matrons bathing him in kerosene.
In kerosene.
And shaving his head.
Bro. In kerosene.
In kerosene.
Bro.
Lighting skin.
Bro, kerosene is for like, to turn on heaters, that's the gas for heaters.
Right. Did you hear what he said? It lightens your skin.
Your skin.
Damn.
Yeah, that explains the picture.
Right.
So it says, students at federal boarding schools were forbidden to express their culture, just like we read in 2 Maccabees 6, right? 6 and 6. It says, everything from wearing long hair to speaking even a single Indian word.
Mm.
That sentiment is very heavy today. Lord forbid you speak Spanish in front of these Trumpers, right? Even a single Indian word, Wright said he lost not only his language, but also his American Indian name. I hadn't even read that part, and I was harping on the name.
Right, right.
Remember, they called him Bill Wright. He said, I even lost my American Indian name.
Wow.
He says, I remember coming home, and my grandma asked me to talk Indian to her. And I said, Grandma, I don't understand you, Wright says. She said, then who are you?
Right.
Damn.
Right,
that's
right.
That Daniel 9 and 7.
Right.
See, you
that's
know,
the confusion of faces.
That is so heavy, man. That is psychological warfare.
Hey, I'm telling you. And it's sociological as well, because before the show is up, I want to read this little excerpt and we'll kind of set up next week's show this way. Wright says he told her his name was Billy. Your name's not Billy. Your name's Tahrum, she told him, and I went.
Right.
That's not what they told me. According to Siana Lowamaya, head of the American Indian Studies program at the University of Arizona, the intent was to completely transform people inside and out. That's 1 Maccabees 1, verse 52, where it says, to the end that they shall forget the law and the customs and all that stuff
right.
and who they were. The intent was to completely transform people, reform schools, transform or reform inside and out. That's the kerosene.
Right.
They didn't just want you not inside. So they so even in their words where he said, kill the Indian, save the man. No, they wanted you to be furnished like them.
Right.
They wanted you to be representative of them. This is why when they took us in captivity, going back further from when the conquistadors came and they took us back to Spain, they would dress us in their European attire
yes.
and take pictures of us. And they would call us curios
right.
because we were a curiosity to them.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny to them to see us dressed like them
right.
and in their apparel and doing their customs because it was foreign to us. It was not familiar, so we reacted as well. You know, those stifling dresses
yeah.
and all this stuff. And I'm not talking about the modesty aspect, right? Because modest apparel, our brothers and sisters were not savages.
Right.
The only reason we started being represented that way, one, it was to purvey a sense of us being savages when they came over here. And two, is because they robbed so much of our stuff that we barely had any clothing
right.
to be able to fully cover ourselves.
Right.
So they wanted us to dress that way. Again, it was a propaganda mechanism.
You know what that reminds me of? Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
We dress up as things and people laugh,
mm-hmm.
right? That's
mm-hmm.
what they did to us. They took us, they put us in their costumes,
right.
yep.
okay, and laughed at us.
Right.
Yep. So she says language, religion, family structure, which is a sociological term we'll get into at some point, economics, the way you make a living, the way you express emotion, everything they wanted them to change, everything. Lomawama says from the start, the government's objective was to erase and replace
right.
erase and replay. That sounds like a political line that a politician could run on in these last days.
Yeah.
Erase and replace Indian culture, part of a larger strategy. That's another way to say a crafty council to conquer Indians.
Right.
They very specifically targeted native nations that were the most recently hostile. Lumawama says there was a very conscious effort to recruit the children of leaders, and this was also explicit, essentially to hold those children hostage. The idea was it would be much easier to keep those communities pacified with their children heading to school somewhere far away.
Right.
Because they said they got the kids. So in a way, it was overt kidnapping.
Yeah.
It was overt terrorism.
Yes.
Right? It was covert in a way because of its subtlety.
Right.
So they had it in such a way where it was like, hey, we got their kids. Right. There'll be no might in thy hand.
Let's hit them where it hurts them the most.
Right. It says they won't rebel. They won't fight anymore because they know we have their kids locked up in a school.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts off a generation.
And it cuts off a generation. All right. So real quick, I want to read a little bit of how this is a sociological. I don't want to say phenomenon, but it's one of their tenets. Right. And there's a term called socialization, right? Yeah, because I want to try to set up next week's show. Like I said, we're condensed. If not, we would have had another 20 minutes right now. But socialization, and I'm going to read from what it says. So I got this book here. I was speaking to the soldier here, and I was telling him how I don't want to lose the page. Page 81. Okay, I don't want to lose the page.
We'll put a picture up.
It's Sociology, A Brief Introduction by Richard T. Schaefer. It's a book used in college sociology classes. It was used in my sociology class. It stuck with me because of the way it was presented to me, and I was in the truth at the time that I took this. And I saw all the parallels, and it made me think of this, right? So it says I'm going to read from page 80 here, and it says, sociologists in general are interested in the patterns of behavior and attitudes that emerge throughout the life course, from infancy to old age. These patterns are part of the lifelong process of socialization, in which people learn the attitudes, values, and behaviors appropriate for members of a particular culture. Appropriate behavior, meaning appropriate behavior is relative to what particular society that you're in.
I was going to say assimilation.
Assimilate
the ruling power.
So biblically, socialization is Deuteronomy, is it 6? Or it says teach them diligently, right? By the way, when thou sit down with them and all that stuff, because that's socializing them.
Mm-hmm.
To know who they are, know their true heritage, how to keep the law, statutes, and commandments. How many of us are raising our children now in here? But some of those behaviors would be seen as odd. Sometimes our children, some of them are shamed at school for keeping some of these customs.
Right.
Because why? It's not appropriate behavior for that culture.
Right.
So this goes into sociology has subcultures and all that stuff like that, culture within the culture and all this other stuff. But the main culture, the dominant culture, is the behavior that's set up here. And this is why I say this is an agent of socialization. If the Blog Talk cuts off, that's fine. We'll just continue on the Facebook side. I'm going to get back to the self and socialization. But there's a lot of information here, but I just want to read this part here. It says agents of socialization. That's from the textbook. That's not a term I came up with. It says, as we have seen, the culture of the United States is defined by rather gradual movements from one stage of socialization to the next. And we'll cover that so you can see the crafty council going in, you know, in a future show. It says the continuing and lifelong socialization process involves many different social forces that influence our lives and alter our self-images. Schools are one of those social forces. How the family structure should be defined as a social force. As we just went over the toxic masculinity and how that's the misnomer for effeminizing and destroying the so-called Black, Hispanic, and Native family, you'll understand how those are social forces that shape the self, right? That's the way sociology looks at it. It shapes the self. And it influences our lives. You know how I often say repentance is an ongoing thing? Yes. Paul says, you know, you have to fight the good fight until your death. He says, run the race as if there is a prize at the end. Right. There's no repenting and I'm done. It's a continual thing because you can always stray back into it. Paul understood spiritually what sociologists have put on paper, that lifelong socialization involves many different social forces because you can always sway back to something else. So even though you may be a repenting Israelite today, and we've witnessed it with some people, you can fall back into something else. It's a real phenomenon. It's mm-hmm. a real force in the world. And it says the family is the most important agent of socialization in the United States, especially for children. In this chapter, they'll discuss six other agents of socialization: the school, the peer group, the mass media, and technology. So we have our show set up for the next several weeks. All right. We have our show set up for the next several weeks. And it's going to get real juicy when we get to mass media and technology, because some of us are experiencing what's happening with them and how they're being utilized today when Bishop was bringing out the time of defamation and all that stuff. So some of those scriptures he brought out, we'll come back into it. I'm going to show you how crafty they are, that and how cunning they are, that it's based on sociological perspectives. It would not surprise me, right? And this goes back to